This is the Champions Rugby Show. I'm Martin Hindley. We're celebrating 25 years of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup by speaking to the legends of the game to hear their stories. We've already been with Brian Habana, Stefan Armitage and Alan Quinlan. And today it's all about a certain number 8 from Leinster Rugby.
And here is Hazel. And Leinster's European dream comes right back into focus.
A 3-time Heineken Champions Cup winner and a European Rugby Challenge Cup winner to boot as well. Joining me today, I'm delighted to say, is Jamie Heaslip. Thanks for coming on, Jamie. How's things?
Very good. I've suddenly got a shudder going down my back hearing those names, and memories come flooding back of 2006 against Alan Quinlan. I think it's 2014 or 15 against Stefan Armitage and Brian Habana in their Toulon days, and being on the receiving end of a couple of losses against those big names.
I was going to start off by asking about your Twitter bio, which says this: be yourself, everyone else is taken. Is that a mantra you've always followed throughout your career?
It is, to a certain degree. I mean, it's a very famous Oscar Wilde quote, who is obviously one of our Irish, Ireland's most kind of astounded writers. And in a way, I think, you know, rugby being such a traditional, in the past, such a traditional type of sport with very traditional values. And when I was coming through, you know, I had challenges against that in terms of what you're meant to say and do and look like as a player. And so that's that kind of something that has stuck to me. It's very much of like, you know, be your own person, do it your way. Don't worry too much about what others are doing. Focus on yourself. And you can expand that out into even what your team is about. And it comes back to, you know, culture and values that kind of stem throughout everything.
And by being yourself, you've certainly made a significant imprint on the history of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. We'll get into some of those details about your experiences shortly. But for you, and I suppose for Leinster as well, what does the tournament mean to all of you?
Oh, wow. It's of club rugby, it's the pinnacle. That's how I've always looked at it, how the club has always looked at it. You know, I remember when I first started playing, you know, you're kind of looking at, you know, in Ireland, Munster were very much the guys who set the standard and set the barrier, you know, set the kind of the threshold. And we were always aspiring to be like them. And then, you know, when we got our taste of success and kind of had our run, we wanted to keep that going because that's what we were aspiring to. And Leinster are now aspiring to have 5 stars in that jersey. You know, I remember back in 05, 06, you know, Michael Checker talking to us about creating a dynasty, you know, and which related to me because I'm a big NFL fan, and looking at the Cowboys when they created their dynasty in the 90s, it was like, okay, how do we do that? And that's something we've always aspired to. And Europe was the way that we measured it. I think if you play rugby, it's, you know, a European Cup weekend, it's special.
Did it make it more important to you and sort of increase that desire to get your hands on the trophy that Munster had done it sort of twice in 3 years before the very famous season of Leinster in 2008-09?
It did, yeah. You know, because they set the standard, you know, they had a team that were, you know, they got there, they were so close in so many times, it's such a cohort of players, and they're playing in such a way, in a style that was kind of ahead of everyone else. And they probably or should have won more, but they were the ones, but Ulster actually were the first Irish team to do it. And then obviously Munster kind of took the reins, set the standard, and we aspired to it. And I'll never forget that moment in the 05-06 season in the Lands End Road when we were playing them in a semi-final, and coming out onto the field at the very start of the game, and I'd say 70-80% of the crowd were red, and it was meant to be our home game. Like, you know, you're in Dublin, you would have thought it's at least 50-50. But I remember that week that there was friends of mine who were Leinster fans who were there wearing Munster jerseys because they weren't proud of Leinster, but they were, you know, such was the dominance of Munster. So what Munster were doing both on and off the field is what we aspired to. And we wanted to make people proud of what Leinster was about. And the best way to do that was through Europe. And yet we turned a corner in the 08-09 season and kicked on from there.
Well, there were no shortage of stories in that 2008-09 season. If you think about that quarterfinal against Quins and then the semifinal in front of 82,000 plus at Croke Park. I mean, to avenge that semifinal against Munster a few years before and to get to the final in such a way and in front of that size of a crowd must have been an extraordinary experience.
Yeah, especially for myself, because walking out into that field in the Aviva Stadium in 05 and seeing, you know, 78% in red, and then coming out into the field in 2009 in Croke Park, setting a record, I think, at the time for the biggest ever club game in rugby. And then we broke that against Ulster in 2012 final, I believe, in Twickenham. But it was 50-50 red and blue. And it was unbelievable. Like, it was just a moment to realize of how far we'd come as a club, how we turned the tide in terms of the pride people felt of Leinster. And then even separate to that, like how far Irish rugby had come. You know what I mean? You had two big teams, Irish teams, in a semi-final, filling out an 82,000-seater stadium. You know, it was a little bit unprecedented. And, you know, it was a really, really cool moment, you know, because they all the fans were like, it was blue and red, but they had kind of done it in checkered. So it was really, really cool just even visually to look at. And then, you know, the way the game went, we had some Herculean efforts. You know, Rocky Elsom somehow saved us on the, you know, after they made a line break that could have been potentially changed the game for Munster. Then Alan Quillen got sent off for gouging and that kind of really swung it in our favour. And then the moment for me was, you know, Dricko getting the intercept, running the length of the field, scoring. And then, you know, with 10 minutes to go, seeing Munster fans leave the stadium, we know we'd broken them. And that was such a juxtaposition from where we were in that 2006 game and how far we'd come along. And, you know, it was a pretty cool moment to be a part of that in that last 5 minutes. Because up until that point, it was helter skelter. We were running all over the place. And I don't actually remember much of the game, such as the workload you were getting through.
After getting up in such a contest with all of the build-up and the size of the crowd and the world record, I mean, what did it say about the club and some of the special characters in that dressing room that you were able to go again against Leicester Tigers at Murrayfield? And that was a Leicester side looking for an unprecedented third league and European Cup double. They were some side, but you went toe-to-toe with them and got up again. I mean, what did it say about that group of players?
Well, you look at that group of players and hindsight's a great thing, obviously. But when you look at that group of players, right, people forget. You look at the front row, you had Keane Healy, a Lion. You know, you had Leo Cullen, you had Nathan Hines. I wasn't a Lion at that stage, but I was, you know, subsequently made a Lion. You know what I mean? Sean O'Brien, Lion. Rob Kearney, Lion. You had a partnership, centre partnership of Brian O'Driscoll and Gordon Darcy. You had, you know what I mean? Like, you just keep going on and on and on. You had Johnny Sexton, who no one had heard about really. Like, obviously, we all known about him, but he kind of came on Felipe in the semi-final, future Lion and Ireland captain. We had a pretty good team, but at the time, I think you also had like people like Shane Horgan and that in the team as well, obviously, right? But they'd established themselves with this younger cohort. We were just starting out in our journey. And we had that perfect mix of like guys who'd been through the wars and guys who are starting out the journey who had a taste of not great times, but were now at the top of the mountain. While Leicester were probably a little bit more experienced in their team, had tasted it a couple of times. But I don't know, maybe they could have underestimated some of the at the time younger players in the squad.
Going the wrong way for Leicester if they want to drop goal, going far the wrong way. There's the penalty, and it's gone to Leinster, and everybody knows it's Leinster at last. Leo Cullen calmly checks. It wasn't just a final, but it's a first trophy as well. And the triangle of winners for Ireland in the Heineken Cup is complete.
How much do you remember about how you celebrated that first Heineken Cup?
Well, vaguely. It was a mad old time. I'll give you a little insight. There's really cool moments for that final. So at the time, obviously, European rugby was based in Dublin. And I had a buddy who actually worked in there, right? And obviously one of the things for European rugby was, you know, when you came, ran out into the field, you had all the flag bearers on the field. And no one really knew this, but a lot of those guys obviously were Irish because European rugby were organizing it. And they were all my buddies from Nace. So as I ran out into the field in Murrayfield, they're all my buddies from Nace. And I was like a massive G up for me. So you had that moment. So afterwards, when we were celebrating, they're all on the field with me. So I was actually one of the few players who had all my buddies. Now, they're all in Heineken, you know, European Heineken rugby gear, but they're all on the field with me, which is really, really cool. So I was celebrating both my teammates and my buddies, which I think I was probably the only person able to do that. And then obviously I saw my family and stuff like that. But we were meant to meet up with the Lions the next day. Like, so I was like, right, I've got to enjoy this really, really quickly because I'm going to be flipping the page onto the Lions really, you know, the next day. So I reckon I had about 2 bottles of champagne down my neck before I even got into the shower after the game. Such was my excitement to enjoy or my energy to enjoy the moment after the game. So I was in a good vibe leaving the changing room, and I had such a good night that Luke Fitzgerald was banging on my door for a solid half an hour at 5:30 the next morning to wake me up and bring me to the airport. And thank God he did, because I would have slept through it and missed the flight to over to London to meet with the rest of the Lions squad. But I turned up anyway with the Lions squad, and I was kind of worried because I was a little bit tired. You know what I mean? So a little bit tired, turned up to the Lions, probably wasn't the freshest looking, and it was baking sun in Penny Hill. I was bucketing sweat. They'd given me all this gear. You had to kind of sort through it. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I'm just a shambles of myself here. And Ian McGeachan comes up to me. I was like dying to death, and he could smell it off me, like, you know. And he was like, you know what? I'd be worried if you didn't turn up with that condition. and I was like, oh, thank God. He goes, well, you know, you just won European Cup. Like, you know, you deserve to celebrate that. Now, you suffer a little bit, but like, I'm delighted that you celebrated it. And now let's hopefully celebrate at the end of this tour. So it was a bit of a relief moment for me. But yeah, we had a great night. We flew back to Dublin that night and celebrated long into the wee hours.
Let's talk now about the second final against Northampton Saints, one of the most incredible turnarounds in the Heineken Cup. At what was then the Millennium Stadium, you were at one stage 22-6 down. What on earth happened next?
Well, see, it's a really funny thing. So we actually came in at half time, and when you look back at the game, like the game started really, really fast, okay? And Northampton were like, everything was sticking for them, right? And we were kind of making some errors or compounding errors, and they were punishing us. And they were playing a very expansive game that if you got anywhere tight defensively, they exposed it with people like Ben Foden and that. And so they were playing fast rugby, and we were making errors, and them being the quality side that they were punishing us for it. So when we came in at half time, we were kind of like, we're actually not doing anything wrong, lads. It's, you know, when we have the ball, we're pretty good. We're just forcing the pass, knocking it on when it's not on, making silly errors. And defensively, you know, we were getting tight, or we were having a couple of struggles at scrum time. So we kind of, you know, we came into the change room, split. We all came in together. Joe kind of said those messages to us. Then we split. And kind of the forwards talked about the scrum, you know, what we're going to do, and line out what we're going to do. A couple of tweaks. The backs were effing and blinding. We come together anyway. Johnny Sexton gives his infamous speech about Liverpool and their Stevie Gerrard comeback. Lost on me because I'm not a soccer fan. So I was like, what's he talking about? But basically the takeaway message was, A, we can come back and it'll be class that we can come back. And B, the message from Joe was, just hold on to the ball because we're actually playing good rugby. And that's what we did in the second half. We held on to the ball. Passes were sticking. I'll never forget, there was a pass from Richard Strauss to Leo Cullen. And Leo was able to pick it up off his shoelaces, and I was like, oh my God, I never knew Leo had the flexibility to do that, or B, the capability to do that. So you know, stuff like that was sticking, you know. And there was a moment in the first half where we hit up around about 20-30 meters in from the left hand side, and there was a ruck, and I hit the ruck and I cleaned deep, and as I cleaned deep, I kind of blocked one of their I think it was the prop, and Dricko spotted this as quick as you like, picks and goes straight down the middle. And then I follow him, I get the ball, And a couple of phases later, then Johnny Sexton's over the try line. You know what I mean? And it's just, it's a moment that turns. And the momentum starts swinging that way because we start holding on to the ball. And then, you know, a couple of minutes later, we're down there and I'm doing that reverse play with Sexo where he hits me. I bring it to the line, pull it back to him, and I keep running my line. He swings around me again. I'm allowed to run my line, which makes it difficult for defenders to get around me. I think it was Dobson was couldn't get around me. And again, we isolate one of their props against the 10. It's usually the 10's going to win that. And Johnny Sexton goes scooting in and momentum just starts swinging our way. You know, we hold on to the ball, we get greedy with it. And Northampton just kind of a little bit capitulate and you start seeing them giving out to each other. And once we saw that, we knew we had them. We started controlling the game around scrums. I'll never forget, we got a scrum penalty around the 10-meter line, right in the middle of the field. And it was a huge, huge moment because I think with that kick, we'd gone something like 19 unanswered points by that stage. And that was the nail in the coffin. You could see where they were broken and it was game over. And we just controlled it from then on. And it was a pretty sweet moment afterwards. I'll never forget it, that there's a moment and fair play to the broadcasters at the time because they captured it where the cup is in the middle of the circle and it's the whole squad around it celebrating together. No one's actually touching the cup, but it was like that massive collective effort where we said we could do it at halftime. We did it. No one gave us a chance. Like no one gave us a chance and we pulled it off.
And it feels like the moment when Leinster Rugby truly joins the list of the Heineken Cup greats. It's 2-3. That is greatness. And that second half performance is greatness personified.
You've referred already to the Ulster final at Twickenham in 2012, the most comprehensive of results in the final. Was that the best of those Leinster squads at that time, as you say, continually developing and permanently getting better and better and better?
I think we played, if we're honest, we played our final in the semi-final. I think that was the real final against Clermont. Edinburgh had somehow managed to surprise Toulouse, and Ulster, I don't think, were really challenged along the way. So when Ulster played Edinburgh in the semi-final, we always presumed Ulster were going to win that. But, you know, Clermont were a behemoth at that stage. They were unbelievable. They're one of, and still are, one of the top sides in Europe. And we kind of knew that, like, if we come out of that, that we had a very good chance against Ulster. So that semi-final was probably one of the toughest club games I've ever played in my life. Actually, probably one of the toughest games I've ever played in, including internationals. Such was the standard, the level, the atmosphere, the pressure. That game literally went all the way to the end with Fofana knocking it on at the death. So I'll never forget it then when we were watching. I think they played the day before or earlier than us. And we were watching Ulster celebrate and they were like doing a lap of honor around the Aviva Stadium at the time, you know, standing beside the Twickenham sign, you know, pointing the fingers up and us kind of going, oh, they think they've won it already. You know, we had been there. We know that like it's good to get to the final, but it's a whole different game to win the final. So we had a real kind of point to prove that we weren't this kind of one-off thing, that our squad was consistent and that we were the standard setters at that time, almost to ourselves as well. So, you know, that game was done after 20, 30 minutes, if I'm honest, then in the final, we'd put them to the sword. And the last 20, 30 minutes of that game was great just to enjoy, to be honest, because everything was going our way. We put a pretty substantial score on them. You know, I remember looking around the crowd then and just hearing the music coming in. And it was really good to see because all the Ulster fans and the Leinster fans at the time were just kind of celebrating together because it was kind of like that semi-final where we had two Irish teams in the final of Europe. So it was great to be able to enjoy that one.
The fourth star went on that jersey in 2018 in Bilbao, by which time you had retired already. How strange was that to watch those celebrations? Must have been something of a bittersweet experience for you, I imagine.
You feel part of it. You know, I had to retire because of injury in February of that season. I felt like I was still part of the squad. Really, really proud of the guys coming through because, you know, I'd worked with Jack Conan you know, he's a quality player. There's other young players coming through as well, like Max Deegan, who's been playing a lot with Jack out. Caelan Dyrus is another one. But really, really proud. Like, it was funny, though. I tell the story going, like, you know, you think you're really such. This is where Leinster had gotten to, where they were such a strong squad. They'd built out a squad of 40, 50 players that they could interchange really, really well. They'd invested a lot in their academy system. That was bearing fruition now. So you think you're a really important part of the squad, and then you retire and they go on and win Europe and the Pro 14 in the 1 year. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm not that important. So, so it was a bit of a reality check. But no, I felt very proud. I was away with my wife, and we were down in Portugal. We were watching the game, and I felt really, really proud of the guys because, you know, the actual game itself, they kind of pulled it out of the bag, I suppose, because, you know, Racing definitely put it to them. And it wasn't a day for playing expansive rugby, and Leinster just kind of stuck to their guns and kind of grinded it out in the end.
You're still contributing to the present of the Heineken Champions Cup with the work that you're doing with broadcasters. How has that been for you? How have you enjoyed that very different world?
I love it. Yeah, it's really good fun to be able to do the commentary side of things, being able to try and give people insight into what they're doing, what players are doing, what teams are thinking, like the different personalities of the players and their decision making, but also the personality of the teams, you know, and the way they're trying to play and why that's successful or why it's not. It's great, you know, and I'm still a fan of the game, so it lets me watch a lot of rugby, and usually you get really good seats, so it's a win-win.
Jamie, we enjoy your entertainment, not only on the television, but also through this Champions Rugby Show podcast as well. Thanks so much for joining us. We're looking forward to hearing plenty more from you in the coming months and years. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Some terrific stories and insight from Jamie Heaslip, a man who had a big impact on the Heineken Champions Cup and on Irish rugby in general, a ball-playing back row forward who on his day was one of the best in the world. On Leinster's Dynasty in Europe, and the very first podcast ever in the world to feature both Oscar Wilde and the Dallas Cowboys. Please subscribe to our Champions Rugby Show podcast, leave us a review as well, especially if you like it, and let us know which players you want to come next to share their stories from 25 years of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. We've got more European legends coming up shortly, but until then, goodbye.